Welcome to the Homeschool Conversation Podcast, where we talk all things homeschool. We have conversations with different homeschool experts and moms like you to help us all start talking about these very important homeschool questions. So I hope you'll enjoy today's episode.
So on today's episode, I have a very special guest that I'm so honored and excited to interview. She has been someone that has really helped revolutionize the way I homeschool, the way I think about learning, and it's just been a beautiful influence on my life, honestly, from her books to her podcast. And I think the whole homeschool community agrees that the philosophies that we're learning through this guest today has just been changing the way we parent, really, and the way we homeschool. So I'm so honored to introduce Julie Bogart onto the Homeschool Conversation Podcast. And I'm so humbled that you're giving some of your time over to me today to interview you. So welcome to the podcast, Julie.
Thank you, Ashley. I'm thrilled to be here.
I know. I know you love homeschool talk. I know you're so passionate about it. So it's like you couldn't be more of a perfect guest to interview about these very important questions I have for you today. So
wonderful.
You know, we talked about some of the things that we were going to be tackling today. So I want to give some of our listeners a preview of who you are and what you're working on. And I'm sure everybody already knows who you are, but if you could share a little bit about what you're working on right now with the Homeschool Alliance and Brave Writer, just so that some people can get some insight into the wonderful works you're doing for the homeschool world.
Oh, thank you. So I homeschooled my kids. I have five of them. And I did that full-time for 17 years. And then some of them chose to do a little bit of high school. Some of them actually did full-time public high school. One of them didn't. So they've all had different sort of transitions to adulthood, but they're all adults now. And what I discovered over those years when I was really in the trenches trying to figure out parenting and home educating all together is that I really wished there was a space dedicated to my professional development. So I did a lot of research on my own. I was part of what used to be called email groups and online discussion boards, and I would go to the library and check out books and I'd read blogs. But what I really wished for was like a dedicated environment that went beyond curriculum shopping or went beyond just narrating what the different philosophies of homeschooling were. I needed to understand, how did my role as a parent fit into the learning task? What do I do if sibling rivalry is preventing me from teaching copy work? How do I handle a child who's struggling with ADHD tendencies and another one with dysgraphia? How do I select a math program that fits one personality and then realize it's not as suitable for the next child? And what are those characteristics that I'm supposed to pay attention to? So I was really looking for like nitty-gritty training, I think, and coaching that went beyond curriculum shopping and conventions where people just tell you what to buy. And so over all those years, you know, I kept a blog and I continued to do research. I started my company, Brave Writer, in 2000 with the aim of providing that kind of instruction around writing. So instead of just telling parents, okay, the assignment is have your child write a descriptive paragraph, I actually knew that that was not accomplishing the goal. What parents needed was coaching in what to do with a child who, given that instruction, looked at the blank page and returned a blank stare. That child who said, I can't think of anything to say. A parent who's got instructions about a paragraph doesn't know what to do with the child who can't just follow the instructions. So the goal I've had all along is to actually equip parents for the task of educating, not just shopping, not just curriculum implementation. So where we are today in Brave Writer is we've built a huge program around writing. We have online classes and curriculum that cover literature and original writing and learning the mechanics of reading and writing. And then we have a space that you mentioned called the Homeschool Alliance. And that's our tagline for that has been grad school for homeschool. It's basically a space where we talk about how to grow into an effective educator, how to be a compassionate parent, and how to become an awesome adult. You know, that adult you always imagined you would be when you were 15, right? The the person you wanted to grow up to be that could do all the things you weren't allowed to do when you were 16. So I created this space with all of those things in mind. And it's been going for 6 years with a very thriving community. But over the last year, I've become dissatisfied with this sort of triage decision our customers have had to make. You know, we know most home educators are on a single income, and we know that buying curriculum is their top priority because they've been charged with educating their kids. And yet I am convinced that the resources we've developed in the Alliance will lead to the greatest success in homeschooling for parents. And I got tired of making them choose between those two expenses and decided that this year, starting now, that if our parents invested in Brave Rider, we would invest back in them by inviting them into the equivalent of the Alliance. So the Homeschool Alliance is the homeschool coaching space. We also have done coaching for Brave Rider programs through a Facebook group. We are now bringing all that together in our own location on braverider.com, and we're calling it the Brave Learner Home. So in June, for instance, if you purchase one of our literature and mechanics programs, you will get lifetime membership to the equivalent of the Homeschool Alliance and coaching to implement that product. And then in the start of July, July 1, we will roll out yet another way to make that same transaction happen, where when you make an investment in Brave Rider, you'll get back this lifetime membership. June happens to be a deal, but that's what we're doing. Yeah.
So that's amazing. So basically what people are getting is not just a curriculum, but they're also getting a coaching community / book club / everything totally. That you could ever, any type of support you could ever want, on top of also having the curriculum to help guide you.
That's right. And it's, we debated, I think originally, like a year ago, we were thinking of when you buy, you know, each year that you buy something, you get a year of coaching. And as the year wore on, that became less attractive to me. I mean, fiscally, maybe it makes more sense to do it that way, but I just remember being a homeschooler and this thing of maintaining subscriptions and calculating expenses and having such a need for community and coaching and having to think about whether to spend money on that or not just bothered me. Then the pandemic hit. And suddenly we've got all these brand new homeschoolers who don't know anything about homeschool, don't even know where to look up books about the various identities or philosophies of homeschooling. And I came back to the team and I said, that's it. I want to do lifetime memberships. This is our 20th anniversary year. And we'll try this year. We'll try giving away lifetime memberships while people are buying our program and see how that goes. So starting now, all the way through the end of May of 2021, we will have offers that make it possible to be added in a lifetime membership to this Brave Learner Home when you make a Brave Rider purchase. And right now, the purchase is these three programs, the Dart, the Arrow, or the Boomerang. They are literature programs. So you read a book aloud, and then we teach you verbs and nouns and spelling and literary devices like onomatopoeia, and how to discuss books, and we give you book club party ideas. We do all of that each month for a book that goes with the level of your child. So when you invest in one of those programs, you get this membership. And then we will be doing webinars, and we have a community discussion board with trained Brave Rider staff who will be giving you implementation skills. So let's say you get the product and you're going along and we teach you about adjectives, you have a question, you just come ask. And there's like a slew of people who are going to answer. Or you might say, wow, my child had a big breakthrough. I need somebody to be excited with me. So you come and you post it, and the community is going to come back and say, woohoo, you're amazing. Keep going. So it's both a cheerleading space and truly a professional development space.
Just love that. I mean, I feel like when I first started homeschooling, which was only 3 years ago, I felt like I remember so vividly feeling so lost and like I didn't know where to turn. And I just felt like I had a curriculum bully like following me around my life that just kept saying, this is the best curriculum. This is the best curriculum. And you know, it was just so overwhelming. And one of the things I remember is the homeschool community just coming and swarming around me like a bee's nest, almost just saying like, you know, you don't have to choose a curriculum. You can find your child's learning style. You can quit a curriculum and pick up a new one. And I just felt so supported and I felt so liberated by having that support. But then the support eventually goes away. You know, eventually people go back to their lives and then you don't want to trouble them anymore. And then you're kind of back on your own again in your own space. So I love that you have this permanent space that's virtual, that's convenient, where people yes. are all there willingly to jump on. So that's just a beautiful thing that you have going there. I love that. Are you having a big growing right now with the whole?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah, there's been, because I think it's really the underlying hunger. I have this joke from when I was homeschooling. I remember when my oldest son was in fourth grade and we were trying Saxon math. And I was on this one page in the chapter trying to understand the instructions that were on the page. And I'm not gifted at math. Math is my Achilles heel. And I remember being really frustrated that there was no phone number on the program where I could just call Mr. Saxon and ask him what the heck he meant in this one instruction. And I knew that if I had his phone number, and this of course is like before the internet, but I knew if I had his phone number, in probably 30 seconds, he could clarify this little bit of confusion, but there was no way to reach him. And the way traditional curriculum has been produced in the school system and in the homeschool space, there is like this chasm between the writers of the program and the support a person needs to implement it. Now, in the school system, they might have an in-service day where they bring in the creator of the curriculum to train the teachers. They give them a teacher's manual. Most credentialed teachers have been through an education program that is supposed to help them understand the properties of teaching, but homeschoolers don't have any of that. What we have instead is big, loving hearts and a willingness to put in more time than anyone would ever imagine you would put in for learning how to educate and still finding some of these subject areas opaque. Like, okay, I've read the writing curriculum. I've told my child the exact instructions. She's refusing to move her pencil. What do I do? Threaten her, reward her, do it for her. And they wonder about all those choices and there's nobody there to kind of guide them through it or to say, you know, if you had a classroom of 20 right now, you would automatically have some ideas because 20 different kinds of students would present to you, but you only have one who's 10 right now and you've never been with another 10-year-old and you don't really know what a 10-year-old's capable of. So we're trying to bridge that gap. We're trying to create a space where when you're having those feelings, you can just show up. And you're not checking your bank account to see if your subscription is about to end. You know, a lot of people would join for like a couple of months because they couldn't afford every month. So they're trying to cram all their questions into a 2-month period and then leave. And then, you know, you have a problem in month 3 and you're like, oh no, I left the group that was helping me. I was a homeschooler. I just suddenly realized, you know, whatever all the business coaches say, whatever. I just didn't want that anymore. I would rather put our energy into making our products and our classes really top-notch and charge people for those. And then on the back end, provide the true support and coaching they need to be effective with those tools. So that's really where it all came from.
And I can totally see how that, you know, is really going to be helpful in the long term, because I feel like with homeschooling, it really is a journey that is usually long term and the support is needed over a long period of time. But I'm just wondering what advice or what direction can we offer parents, and even for myself, I'm still in the trenches. What advice can we offer people who are just facing that decision paralysis right now with curriculum choices and co-ops and all of that sort of thing?
Yeah, so one of the ways that I dealt with that, I got advice, I remember midway through my homeschool career saying, don't spend all your money in the summer.
That's great advice.
Yeah, feather it in. I have a principle in Brave Writer that we call the one thing principle. And you can get it all done by following this principle. So here's how it goes. dig deep and figure out the pain point, the one thing right now that you either feel is the hardest to teach, or the subject you've kind of overlooked, or the one you're most interested in teaching. Like, pick something for a focus and research that and purchase something for that and implement that before you shop for the next thing, before you do the next thing. Give yourself permission. You are not in a school system, so you don't have to have all six plates spinning at once on day one. You can literally feather things in one at a time, maybe even one per week. You can pick a couple of the core things, maybe math and language at the beginning, and not even add in history until November, because there's no pressure on you. You're not in a school. And what I've discovered is a lot of parents in the fall figure out what doesn't work, and then they're out of money. But January is this incredible restructuring of your homeschool. It's when you kind of figure out in the fall what your kids like, what they didn't like, and almost everyone wants to buy something fresh for the second semester. So don't shoot your wad. Save some money. Make sure you know there will be more money available to you in January. And in the fall, feather things in one at a time over a period of weeks. And allow your kids to ramp up. You know, one of the big sort of dirty little secrets about traditional education is that kids go from summer to a full day of classes overnight, right? They go to bed having had an entirely empty day to waking up to a full day in school with homework. And by the end of the first week, they are cranky, exhausted. They feel overwhelmed because that's how school is organized. You don't have to do that to your kids. There's no requirement that says that's how school should be. So what you can do is you could start in the second week of August and your kids wouldn't even know it. You might start with something really wonderful like poetry tea time out on the back deck. Read some books, make some scones, drink tea, talk about poems. And that might be your first day of school and your kids don't even know it. In love your own it. Mind.
I love right? it. And you know what yeah. it is? I think in theory, a lot of parents want to be able to have that love of learning being fostered in their child where they're all enjoying it. But I think the nasty little devil on the shoulder appears and it says, you're going to fall behind. Your child's going to not be able to read. They're never going to learn how to do equations. And then you think that if you relax a little bit and follow your child's lead. I mean, I can only speak for myself and some of the homeschoolers who are kind of a few more years in. This may not be something a new homeschooler is worried about, but I do think even new homeschoolers struggle with that, you know, that they're skeptical to homeschool because they think if they do, their child's going to fall behind. And
absolutely.
I almost don't even know what to say or what
to
think. Oh,
I do. That's my favorite question. All right, so let's... Let's talk about that for a minute. I love that you said devil on the shoulder. I have this this little icon I've created that I give in my talks, and I call her the ghost of public school past. So she's this little ghost that sits on your left shoulder. She looks kind of like one of those English teachers with the glasses that hang off of a chain, and she's got a bun, and she's looking down her nose at you, and she is saying, oh, but you know, third graders are writing full paragraphs and you can't get your third grader to write a sentence, right? She's saying, oh, did you know that all fourth graders know how to divide fractions and your son still hasn't mastered the times tables? The ghost of public school past is the voice telling you a fantasy. You think it's reality, but they're telling you a fantasy. Here's why I say it's a fantasy. The writing that third graders are doing, for instance, let's say they're filling whole paragraphs, whole pages, because that's what the school requires, and they don't brook any resistance. You know, at home, you're in this dynamic negotiating tension all the time with your kids. They know that they can work you over because you love each other. So if your child doesn't want to do it, they trust you. They say, I don't want to do it. They tell you the truth. In school, they don't tell the truth. They just knuckle under and do what they're supposed to do because all the conditions have told them that if they don't, they'll be in trouble. Do you know what kind of writing that produces? Wooden, dead writing. Now, occasionally, a child like me who loved writing tended to shine in that environment anyway, but I have read third grade writing and most of it tastes like cardboard. There's nothing in it that makes me want to keep reading. The opportunity we have at home isn't to get through and get done. It's to get depth. It's to get buy-in. It's to have a child value the work they're doing. My daughter had two best friends who lived across the street who went to school. We were homeschooled, they were public school. And the first year that we lived in our house here in Ohio, Johanna was in fourth grade. And these two little fourth graders on the last day of school got a garbage can and that was wet metal. And they threw all of their year's schoolwork into the garbage can with parental supervision and then doused it in lighter fluid and burned it.
Remember
and that was their celebration of a year's worth of learning. Do you know what learning looked like in our house? Every single piece of paper they did went in a clear page protector inside of a sacred notebook that we left out on the coffee table to page through every day of the year. Literally, all these years later, two decades later, I still have all those notebooks. There is a valuing of learning. Now, it may look externally like it's going slower, but that is to your advantage because your kids, as they consolidate skills and learn why learning is valuable, will make spurts of learning that run circles around other students who are in traditional education. My own three of my kids who did traditional high school where they did two or more years of public school in high school were not as far along in math as their peers, partly because I just wasn't as skilled at teaching it. They did have tutors, but we just didn't get to the same place, quote unquote, as their peers. All of them finished pre-calculus by the time high school was over. They all earned A's. Do you want to know why? Because they know how to learn. When I put them in the environment that required a little more of them, they weren't burnt out. They weren't just catering to a system. They just knew exactly what to do to learn and grow. And my oldest son, who is allergic to traditional schooling, who only went through Algebra 2 in high school, who quit college three times, is a self-taught computer programmer who makes a ton of money today, married, has a kid, great job, 32 years old. So I share this to just kind of give you a picture of the illusion that there is some model happening at school that is better than what can happen at home.
It was just so, I can't tell you how encouraging that is to hear because it really does feel like you're missing out on something. I mean, I think people already think that their kids are missing out on something by not having their kid in school. And to just know that there's something so much more important and a longer investment being made when you let them take their time with their writing and just with learning how to learn, I just think that is such an important thing to scream from a rooftop somewhere, you know, for whoever
completely
can hear
it. You know what's funny? You made a really interesting comment. You said it's such a relief to think, you know, maybe they're not missing out on something. You know what's actually true? Kids at school are missing out on home. And you know how we know that? Because this pandemic has made parents see how much their kids love being home.
Yes, yes. I've heard over time and time again parents are seeing, not only are they seeing the learning gaps that they thought weren't there.
Yes, right.
But they're also seeing their children come out of their shells. You know, they were children that were suffering like with anxiety and just limitations and just issue after issue that they no longer are facing at school. And now they're in the comfort of their home in the safety realm of their parents to learn. And they're just seeing their kids blossoming.
And they have time. You know, I was talking with a friend of mine the other day and he has a daughter who's 13 and 8. And he said, it's incredible. I don't know when it happened, but they started to think that what would be really great is to do themed dinner parties for my wife and I, so the two parents with the two kids. So the 13 and 8 year old, and you know, we're always told in school settings that those age gaps would never be friends. These two little girls, 5 years apart, are making themed dinner parties for their parents, and they're doing them once a week, and they're taking a week to do it. So they are researching recipes, they're making all the foods, they are from scratch making decorations for the backyard, they are looking up games, They create place cards and table settings. So the first one they did was Hawaiian themed. The second one they did was Western themed. And they're so into it now, they're like, can we just do this, you know, forever, like every week? And I started laughing and I said, you know, that's actually what homeschoolers just do naturally. I remember we did a solar system tea party, a Japanese meal down on the low cushions, a Moroccan henna party, a gold rush party. I mean, we did party schooling for years. That's literally how we did homeschooling.
Oh my gosh, I loved that podcast episode that you did about party schooling. It just, my mouth was on the floor. Just you talk about party schooling, I'm like, I cannot believe the level of trust and the reward that you got out of allowing your children to do party schooling, to plan a party and then to actually watch it happen, and to trust that there was a tremendous amount of learning and engaging happening, and then forget all the memories that were stained into both you and your child's heart. I mean, my mouth was on the floor. I couldn't stop telling people about that.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, and you know, the thing of it is, I think what helps, the foundation is this. We've got to stop thinking about if we're like school and instead harness the properties of home. We've got to think about home. Like when I was thinking about my son, he had to write this report. We were in California, fourth grade. So it had to be something about California history. We were a part of this independent study program that was funneled through the public schools, and they had a few minimal requirements. So one of the requirements was this, what I call the dreaded elementary school report. I mean, is there anything more wooden, less interesting to write, less helpful in learning than one of those dull, lifeless reports that talks about exports and imports of a state for a fourth grader? I mean, nobody cares about any of that. So anyway, I was thinking with my son, Noah, who is very active. He's the computer programmer, you know, Lego kid who liked whittling wood, climbing trees, rock climbing, skateboarding. How was I going to get him to be interested in California history? Well, as we were reading, we stumbled on the gold rush and he showed quite a bit of interest. And we were living in Southern California at the time. We had Disney passes. We went to Knott's Berry Farm. And it suddenly dawned on me that maybe we could do like panning for gold with fool's gold, you know, pour a bunch of sand into the toddler's sand pit and get some water with a hose and see what that was like. And then I thought, oh, what if all of his friends came? And then I thought, well, wait a minute. What if we just make it a party? So I said to him, hey, do you think this would be fun? And he was like, yes. And then without even realizing it, I watched unfold learning I could never have planned in a unit study. For instance, we did all the invitations by hand. So he was learning how to address envelopes, how to fill out the little invitation cards, how to handwrite neatly so that his friends could actually read the invitation. It wasn't because I was requiring him to be neat.
Right.
It's because being neat actually was a requirement so his friends could read it.
Right.
We took the little invitations to the post office and mailed them. Then we had to calculate how much fool's gold are we going to need based on the, you know, square feet of this little sandbox to make it a satisfying experience. Not so much gold that you get it every time, but not so little that you couldn't find it.
Right.
Math. Then we built a sluice. We had to have the wood the right length, get the right nails, get the right hammers. We did a scale where when you brought your fool's gold, you put it on one side and then you balanced licorice whips on the other side. And when they balanced, that's how many licorice whips you got for the fool's gold. But we had to test all that out to make sure the ideas actually worked. We made a map of California where we could see Sutter's Creek, which is where gold was first discovered. And so we played pin the gold nugget on Sutter's Creek. And so we made the little nuggets. We spun people around with a blindfold, of course, a bandana, it's the gold rush. And whoever got it closest won a prize. I can't even remember what the prize was. We sang Oh Susanna, we did a campfire, we had Franks and Beans. It was such a party. It was better than any birthday party we ever had.
It was epic. It was absolutely epic, it sounds like.
Yeah. And of course, we only did one in a year. I just want to point that out. Like that level of party doesn't have to happen every week. Like you can do one in a year and it will have a lasting impact. It took us 6 weeks just to get ready. It became kind of our consuming passion. I taught Noah how to use my sewing machine, and we took old flannel shirts that we got at Goodwill, and we made these little like little gold bags, so that as you collected your gold nuggets, you could put them in a little bag with a drawstring and keep it in your pocket. So there was all kinds of learning, right? There was handicrafts, math, writing, reading, research for history, the activities, the imagination, the hosting, learning how to host a party. I mean, if we can think about what home offers, we can get such a rich education for our children.
Right. And then that's the thing, is that I want to have our listeners that are hearing us talk today, I really want them to be able to feel that level of inspiration that comes with really digging into what are the things your children already are loving. What is it that in their free time you find them asking you questions about, and how can you integrate that into learning together? And I feel like it's because we rely so much on book work. We rely so much on proving that learning happened through a workbook. And I feel like maybe we were just programmed to think that way because we all, you know, a lot of us went to public school or private school. So we think that if we prove that learning happened by recording it in a workbook that someone else created, then learning happened. And we can't think of how to prove that learning happened in another way. And I love your example of party schooling as a way to demonstrate that there's so many ways that your child can show that they've learned something. And I'm wondering if, you know, I know you said you only do that once a year, you know, as a goal, but are there other times that you can think of or other ways that we can encourage parents that realize that the book work maybe isn't working for everything? Yes. Are there other ways that we can prove that learning happened, or are we stuck with curriculum? Is that the only way?
So it's always a mixture, right? There are some homeschool parents who eschew curriculum completely. But what I know is curriculum for me sometimes reminded me of things that I wanted my children to know. Like, I don't just have a list in my head of what a second grader is capable of knowing. I don't remember. So sometimes just having the guidance of a program allows you to remember, oh yeah, it's a good idea to cover verbs this year. But what we want to get away from is assuming that because we did it in a workbook, they actually learned it. So one of the things that Brave Writer does, for instance, with our mechanics and literature programs is this. We have a book that you will read aloud every day to your kids. And while you're reading it, you may even ask questions while you're reading. You might say things like, now, who are we rooting for right now? Who are we rooting against? How do we know which character we should root for? How do we know which one we hope isn't successful? And we start to actually have what I call big, juicy conversations, as opposed to this endless instruction, execution, with no meaning making happening. The goal of a robust education is not completion of paperwork, it's internalization of concept. So we start by reading aloud. And then what we do is we've written these little handbooks that go with each book. And we feature a passage from the book each week for 4 weeks. And we use that passage to talk about powerful writing. So we might identify some literary devices like, wow, this is an opening hook. You know, in Charlotte's Web, the opening line is, where are you going with that axe, Papa? I mean, that is a pretty great hook. You read that, and it's a little girl named Fern asking her father where he's going with an axe. You want to keep reading. You know, it wasn't, the light came in through Fern's window and she woke up, right? That's not interesting. So we talk about why the craft of writing is powerful in that moment. Then we start looking at the language and we notice, well, this is her making a statement, and there's a way to indicate that somebody is talking when we write it down. We call it dialogue, but we use these curves, dots, and lines called punctuation marks so that the reader is signaled into what's going on here. So in our products, we don't just say, dialogue punctuation, here's the rule, now practice it 4 times. No, we get very inductive about it. We look at the existing circumstance, we ask questions, we practice, we have conversations, and then our kids start to internalize what they're learning because it has rich meaning for them. So one of the ways that we catalog that learning in the Homeschool Alliance, our coaching community, and that I recommend also in my book, The Brave Learner, is something that I call the monthly narrative sketch. Instead of grading, instead of just keeping track of how many pages you've completed, I ask parents once a month to write a 24-hour day narrative. So you pay attention to everything that happened in the full day, all the conversations about the book, punctuation, when your first grader retold, you know, Charlotte's Web in the bathtub while you're washing her because she's so excited about the story. The fact that you went to the dentist and your child had to learn what a cavity was. The fact that one of your kids was at Taekwondo practice and mastered a new move. All of that goes into a 24-hour sort of review that you write down. Maybe that your child is still struggling with phonics or really hates math and is feeling overwhelmed by learning how to do division. So you put all of this in a narrative to help you actually pay attention to the way learning is evolving for the child and what struggles they're having, so that over time, you're problem solving and supporting the learning journey.
That is so empowering, I think, for parents that
yes.
I think feel like they look at their curriculum and all the boxes that there are to check, and they're realizing, wow, I'm really not checking majority of these boxes, or they feel like they have to check all these boxes. And I love how you just flip that over on its back and say, how about you plan from behind, almost like you're kind of looking back at the things you already have accomplished and giving yourself a little pat on the back, some credit, some encouragement, and reminding yourself like, hey, we are learning things. Even if the book didn't tell us to talk about the cavity, or the book didn't tell us to retell the story of Charlotte's Web, but we did that, and we get credit for that, and that's meaningful. And I feel like planning from behind can be such an empowering place to start for homeschool parents, instead of looking ahead constantly and then looking back at all you didn't do. That can be discouraging and crushing to anyone's spirit. I mean, whether you're a new or experienced homeschooler, I think.
Yes, of course. I think what happens for all of us is that we have been trained to believe in quantity and evaluation over observation of process and quality of experience. So it's a mind shift, right? You have to be willing to let go of the side of the pool. You know, yeah. We're always so interested in the security of what we've been trained to believe means learning. I had a wonderful conversation in a podcast with a psychologist. She had me on her show for other psychologists, I guess, and mothers. And she said that this pandemic was really shocking to her. She had never considered homeschooling, and now suddenly her kid was at home. And one day they were sitting on the couch and he was reading a comic book, and she sat down with him because she had time and they were both home. And they started covering up the words and looking at the pictures and trying to see if they could tell by facial expression in these hand drawings what the story was and what the emotions were. And then they would lift their hand up off the words to see if there was a correspondence between the drawing and what the language represented. And she said they did it for an hour. And she goes, Julie, at the end of the hour, I realized I had just given my 10-year-old a full lesson in psychology. And I never realized I could do that with a comic book.
Yeah.
Isn't that powerful?
It's so powerful. Is so powerful. And I think maybe it did take this pandemic to happen for us to actually slow down and have the time to even sit on the couch to do that, because I know we're all just guilty. Well, I shouldn't say everyone, but I know I'm guilty of just being programmed to be at a fast pace. You think you have to always get to the next thing. And I think for me, one of the most powerful things that I've taken away from listening to you and reading your books is about valuing these little things that they do and really seeing the power in it. Like recently, my daughter, she cut off all of the tags of her stuffed animal. She's only in first grade. She cut off all the tags of her stuffed animals. You know how like it has a tag with their name and their birthday and it has like a poem about them?
Yeah.
She cut off all the tags and she decided she was gonna try to remember all of their names and record them in her diary and try to remember how they were spelled and when their birthday was and how many months apart were their birthdays from each other and how many more days until that birthday is coming. And I think normally I would have been pretty annoyed that she did that she ruined her stuffed animals. And I think normally I wouldn't have even valued the writing, the spelling, the math, thinking. I would have never even saw it as that. I would have punished her because she like mutilated her stuffed animals. But instead, as she was doing it, I almost started to cry with like, and she's looking at me like, "Mom, why are you crying?" And I'm like, "Because you're spelling and you're remembering how to write down things and you're calculating how many months apart things are. And I'm just so proud of you that you're working so hard and you're putting so much effort into this." And she just kind of looked at me with like a deer in the headlights. And I could see a switch went off in her mind as well, that she realized, wow, I can take charge of my own learning. And the things that I'm thinking about and the things that I'm writing are powerful. And my mom values it. And I just was, it was a moment changing time in our relationship and in our homeschool environment, because my son, who's in third grade, was also standing by watching, and I can see him, he's the one who really hates writing, I can see him looking and saying, "What, that counts?" You know, the fact that she's doing this. And I was like, I could just tell this was something so important that was going on, you know. And so I have to thank you really for advocating for that in your podcast and in your book, for really encouraging the whole jot it down concept, where when your child is saying something and they're thinking something, to just give them value for that, it has a lot of power that goes beyond that moment.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. The story I love to share is my son Liam, when he was four. So he's, you know, my fourth child. Obviously at age four, he wasn't writing yet, but he had these little Lego men, and they all had superpowers, and they were all, they all had names, and he would just walk around saying their names, you know, Fire Kick or whoever they were. And I could never keep track of them. So I got a clipboard and I wrote down, I said, "Tell me each one and what they do and how many points they're worth." And he watched me write down each one. He couldn't read yet. You know, very little kid. He carried that clipboard around for a month. He memorized what order those words were in and would stand the little Lego men on each of those names. And then he started adding zeros to the end of the numbers. So at the beginning, it was like Fire Kick was worth 50 points. By the end of the month, he was worth like 50,000 points. And what he was discovering is every time he added a zero and asked somebody to read this page, the number changed. So think about all that pre-reading that was going on for him that wasn't instructive. It was birthed out of his own experimentation and somebody valuing what he was putting out into the world. And you know, it's interesting because Liam was my earliest reader, but one of my slowest writers. He had dysgraphia. He was a left-handed writer. So he went without physically writing for most of the years between 9 and age 11. And I did even his math for him. He would do it orally and I would jot it down. By the time he went to college, he ended up attending a program with a Great Books program where everything was in handwriting. Like, they didn't even use their computers in class. They weren't allowed to. And he ended up writing these 30-page papers on, you know, ancient literature from Greece. This was the kid who couldn't physically handwrite. He always knew he had a voice. And to this day, he's like 26 now, you know, he writes these very thoughtful, long sort of political treatises on Facebook. And they're so well thought out because he never experienced himself as not being a writer. He just couldn't handwrite for a period of time.
Right, which is such a powerful distinction to for children to think that they're not good at something. That is so powerful because they start thinking, okay, I'm not good at writing. I don't like writing and I'm bad at it. It's the subject and I always hated when people would say to kids, "What's your favorite subject in school?" Or what's your favorite time at school? And kids always say, you know, recess or art. And it's very rare for a child to say, you know, "I love writing," or "I love math," or "yeah." So I think that comes from people kind of encouraging children to love one subject and to think that all the other subjects, you don't like them. And especially if you're not good at them, you definitely don't like them and you're never gonna like them. And I love the fact that through homeschooling, I've been able to teach my son that too, that just because you don't like writing doesn't mean you're not good at it. You actually could be using dictation. And that's something that we've recently tried, is letting him dictate to Siri all of the things that he wants to write about that he just doesn't have the hand strength for. He doesn't have the mental strength to remember how to spell everything.
Right.
I said, let's just dictate it and see where your story goes. And he only got a few sentences in before he was like, all right, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And I think before, pre-Julie me, before I started listening to you, I would have been like so discouraged by that. You know, like, you only got three sentences, you know, third graders, paragraphs, XYZ. And I think instead of that, because I've listened to a lot of your concepts and because it's opened my eyes, I started to think, you know, he really tried so hard for those three sentences. And he's only in the beginning stages of trusting and believing in himself. Yes. that he's actually good at this, that he actually has cool thoughts. So I said to him, I said, whoa, I love that story. How did you think of that? I've never thought of a story about a boat going to these different countries. And he kind of looked at me like, really? Like, you think this is good? And I was like, yes, this is so creative. This is so creative. I said, let's take a break from this because I don't know if I can handle finding out what happens next. And so we took a break from it. And the next day when I asked him if he wanted to continue it, he actually jumped off the couch, went to go grab it, and he wanted to continue dictating. And I thought, yes, this is what I call a homeschool mom win. Like, we're actually developing what I think is missing, which is intrinsic motivation. It's like,
yes.
Own, they actually want to do that. So I know we're running out of time, but that's the last question I had for you. One of the last topics I wanted us to touch on before we have to go is, how do we help with our children finding that intrinsic motivation, finding that space where they want to do these things on their own? Because I know that's really at the heart of a lot of moms' issues, is they want their kids to love learning. They want their kids to want to read and all these things, and their kids just aren't, or maybe they are and we're not seeing it. So as we start to close out, I want us to just unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
This concept of intrinsic motivation. What do you think about this? How can we come alongside moms that are just searching for this for their kids?
So the first place we start is recognizing that children already love learning. They may not love to learn the things you want to teach them.
Yes.
But they love learning. You put a kid on Minecraft, they're gonna try and learn everything they can to build the world they want. You know, some kids will find the cheat codes to get the things they need. This is all learning. They love learning the entire trousseau of the American Girl doll that they wanna buy. And they're gonna try and figure out which relatives to, you know, beg for money instead of a gift so they can get their money together and buy that girl. Kids love learning. They wanna learn how to make cookies. You want to learn how to ride a unicycle. You want to learn how to dig a hole in the backyard if you just let them have the big shovel. Kids love learning. What we've made the mistake of is assuming that the school subjects are not interesting and that we have to force them to learn them because they'll never love them. I have a phrase in my book, The Brave Learner, that says, everything can teach anything and anything can teach everything. There's no such thing as an abstract school subject. The reason the school subjects exist is so that we can have the world we live in. So writing exists so that we can record knowledge and information and impassioned pleas and stories. Math exists so we can build skyscrapers and understand medicine and be able to design machines that produce everything from, you know, my pottery barn furniture to a beautiful teapot. Chemistry exists so we can improve the conditioner that we use on our hair, the kind of gel we use to shave our legs. None of these things exist as abstractions. They are related to the actual life we lead every single day. And what is incumbent on parents is figuring out how those school subjects are tied to the immediate needs of their children, not just some career in the distant future, not just admission to college, not just preparation in case they happen to go to public high school. We've got to think about, how is math meaningful for my five-year-old right now. And that means inhabiting the mind of a five-year-old and seizing the opportunities they are offering you all day long. Now, once you see those opportunities, bringing in a curriculum or a worksheet to practice or to give more depth and information is fabulous. But we tend to go the other way. We say, okay, this thing you don't value is on this two-dimensional sheet of paper that needs to be executed while sitting still at the table. And then when you get it done, I'll tell you how you will value it when you're 32. You know, a seven-year-old's just like, I got other things to do, Mom. There's a whole Lego set for the Millennium Falcon over here that I want to build. So what if we start the other way around? What if we're like, wow, he's really into Legos. And you know, Legos are actually designed to look like the multiplication tables. And I wonder if there's a way to be doing that tactilely with our hands before I bring in the workbook. So that's one of the ways that we start to reconceive of it. I call this principle the continent of learning. Put at the center of what would be like a country shape, the interest your child loves. And then I want you to build adjacent countries of the school subjects funneled through the vision of that thing. So let's say it's, you know, a video game at the center of this continent of learning. Well, the video game has artwork, it has narrative, it has computer programming, it has design, it has color theory, it has music, it has scoring point systems for that are mathematical. All of that encompasses every school subject you would ever want to teach. And I'm not saying to build a unit study, I'm saying capitalize on the child's interest. Have big, juicy conversations. When you go to the math page and your child is suddenly frustrated with fractions, and you remember that in their game, every time they get shot, they lose a percentage of that character's life points, you can pause and say, did you know percentage of life points it can be represented by a fraction? Let's see if we can make all the fractions from every time you get shot and how your life points go down. Make it meaningful. Help your child see the relationship to what they care about already. You know, you started by asking what helps them stay connected to learning. And I thought of this fabulous quote by Robin Kimmerer. She wrote a book called Braiding Sweetgrass. She's a beautiful writer, Native American background. And she said this, and I wrote it down just a few days ago, appreciation begets abundance. And I was thinking about how your appreciation of your two kids, when they were expressing in the moment passion for learning, begot, whatever that conjugation is, more abundance from them. They wanted to do more. If we value what our children offer us, they will bring more riches to us. If we devalue what they offer us, they will get stingy and hide what they love because they won't want you to ruin it.
Wow, how amazing of a perspective is that, and how encouraging I think that is for me to continue to trust the process, basically, to really appreciate the fact that you can't stop a child from learning. You really can't. They're going to do it whether you like it or not. It's a matter of, I guess, just offering and fostering that appreciation, those resources when they ask for them, and just the environment, the atmosphere, just offering that and trusting the process. And I think that has been difficult for me as a homeschooler, that to trust it, because I think I always think I have to do the book work in order for the learning to happen. And I think it's been important for me to have books and podcasts and community that reminds me that you really can trust the child's natural curiosity. What you can't trust is sometimes your own your own fleeting thoughts that bring you back to this boxed way of learning and keep trying to pull you back into this one path that we think that there is to success. And I think that's sometimes what I need to stop trusting, and I need to start really leaning into this method of thinking, which is it's already happening. Your children are already learning. They already are asking you a million questions a day. Why is the sky blue? Why did that worm come out of the dirt? Why do I keep dying in Minecraft? Who made Minecraft? I mean, I feel like children are always asking these questions, and we just don't value them. We just don't think that their curiosity is really going to lead us to a path of learning, when what I'm learning is that it actually is the furthest thing from the truth. And I really have to humbly thank you for being so bold and being so willing to encourage homeschool families to see this. You know, I really have to thank you for that.
Oh, that's awesome. I think you're doing a great job, Ashley. Everything you shared to me sounds just beautiful, right? Just really tuning in. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be days where you're like totally without inspiration. Your children look bored and cranky. You know, they need a turkey sandwich. It's raining outside. You're all sick of the house and you're sick of each other. We've just been through a pandemic of confinement. So not every day is going to feel like a party or a revelation of learning. And on those garden variety days, it's okay to return to whatever the routine is. You wake up, you have your read aloud, you do some coffee work, you get out the math books. But when you start encountering this profound resistance, or when it feels like a slog and it no longer leads to a sense of well-being, tapping into the slipstream of a child's abundant interest and curiosity is how you return yourselves to a love of learning, not through greater enforcement of the rules and the routine.
That is just a beautiful place, I think, for us to end off. And I have to thank you for giving up your time. I know you're so busy with everything that you're doing, and I'm so grateful to you.
I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast with Julie Bogard. I had so much fun interviewing her, and I, of course, walked away feeling even more encouraged and inspired. If you have any questions on how you can reach Julie or get connected with her Homeschool Alliance, don't be shy. Please reach out. And until next time, this has been the Homeschool Conversation Podcast.